KSCU Santa Clara presents Robots Attack. Movies, TV, video games, comic books, tech stuff, news, music, but it is geek. It's on Robots Attack. Participate in the show by commenting on Facebook, tweeting them at RobotsAttackMe, emailing the show robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Now, Robots Attack.
That's right. Welcome to Robots Attack, the one and only Geek Central talk show on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the Underground Sound. I am Joe, and with me is...
Caleb.
Jen.
And Jason.
That's right. Yay. We're here to rock your geek world with geek stuff. So, lady and gentlemen, how have you been?
Been good. Been very good.
Do tell.
Nothing super exciting, but another week of work is a good week.
Hooray.
Indeed. The one sort of change that's kind of like is that now I used to do meeting virtually at 8 a.m. and since all the people I work with are on the East Coast, it's been moved to 6 a.m. because it's actually part of it lines up better with another meeting they're already having, which involves the area which I'm working on. So it's unfortunate, but it's best for the company. So. And for the team, so it's okay.
Do what you got to do.
Yep.
As long as you're enjoying what you're doing.
I am enjoying what I'm doing. Bonus.
As long as you enjoy waking up at 6 a.m.
It's
could
not
be
so
worse.
Bad. If that's the worst that I have to do, I'm way okay with that.
Could be 4 a.m. or.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm on the sort of the opposite spectrum of that. This is my last week at work, so I can get to the moving thing.
What?
I know, right? Yeah, Tuesday's my last day at work, so we're getting ready to do all the transition stuff and all that wonderful stuff.
Man.
Are you just like showing up in pajamas and just like...
I am so tempted, let me tell you. I'm only there for half the day anyway. It's like, yeah, sure. I'm here. What else do you want from me at this point?
I've done absolutely nothing exciting whatsoever.
Nothing?
I've played a lot of Borderlands. I've finally wrapped up the series of Stargate, which was sad for me because I finally started really liking it in the last two seasons. But unfortunately, the movie that kind of wraps up the main storyline of the end of the series... I keep falling asleep in the middle of, so I...
Is that one the Ark of Time?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, that was the reason why someone recommended me to watch that, and I watched it, and it made no sense, and then I realized I hadn't watched, like, the last three or four seasons of the show,
yeah.
So that was like, oh,
that's
going
a bad
on.
Idea, because, yeah, it completely has nothing to do with anything that you'd consider Stargate at all. If you didn't see the last two seasons.
Yeah, well, it's just like I'm watching, like, this is interesting, but I have no idea what's going on.
Right.
I think I'll get back to this one.
But yeah, I've enjoyed seeing all of the Farscape characters with a slightly different twist on them.
Mm.
And yeah. So now I'm off to catch up with the Falling Skies series. I'm rewatching the first season and going to go from there.
Cool.
Yeah. I hope so.
I mean,
new season starts up pretty soon.
I'll probably miss that, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, you never know. You might power through the other seasons.
It's true.
I don't think there are as many episodes as
yeah,
a regular season. So
yeah, there are a summer-only show, I believe, so that shortens their season.
Well, plus all cable stuff is pretty short at this point.
Yeah.
It's somewhere between 10 and 15 episodes anymore. So. Mm-hmm.
Very BBC of them.
Yeah.
I think it's cutting costs quite a bit, so that might have something to do with it.
But. Yeah, and it allows them to probably better allocate the budget into the focused time that they are doing it. So
less filler episodes. Mm-hmm. That's good by me.
Always a plus. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. So how about you, Joe? Anything interesting on your side?
Jason and I got a fair amount of the pre-production of the Borderlands thing we're working on done.
Sweet.
We still need to, I guess, finish off the rest of the pre-production stage, and then we can start moving into actual production. And
exciting.
We'll fill you all in as the process moves along. So
yes.
That's probably the most exciting thing so far.
Which is pretty exciting, I'll say.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope it turns out well. It's been pretty neat messing around with it so far. So we'll see from there.
I think we've actually been caught off guard, like some of the things, the little tangents that have turned into like bigger, funnier things. So, or at least what we think is funny.
Yeah.
Who cares about the rest of you guys?
Yeah. Some of the stuff will come to us while we're doing other things. I'm like, wait, you know, I like that. Let's go to it. Let's roll with it.
Yep.
So.
And the joys of collaboration too.
Very true.
Not unlike this show.
Hooray!
Wait, what?
Speaking of the show and collaborating, tell
our audience,
Caleb.
We would even like you to collaborate with us. You can find us on Facebook. Do a search for Robots Attack. That's two words. We're one like away from being like official page status. You can hit us up on Twitter. Our handle is Robots Attack Me, and then you can always find us on email, robotsattackshow@gmail.com. And last but certainly not least is our own website, robotsattack.me, that has links to all the things I've mentioned ahead of time and under the button called Interact, because that's what we want you to do with us, is interact.
Interact.
And you can also find archived episodes of our show and comments, links, all that cool stuff there.
That is right.
Right. And if you become the person that gave us that last like, hey, we might praise you on air for being a spectacular human being.
We will definitely do so.
Yes.
I'm sticking with might in case you have an awkward name.
Legal disclaimers and all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
That we can't say on air.
We will do our best. How about that?
Like, oh, I'm going to like them just so they say this name.
You can't say that on radio. All right. Yeah. So.
Okay. Thank right. you.
That's person the person's name.
Yeah.
All right, well, I say we move into the new releases of the week.
New releases!
All right, we're going to start off with what's coming out in the theater. We've got After Earth in both regular and IMAX experience. We've got American Mary, Crazy Kind of Love, I Do, Now You See Me, Shadow Dancer, Sirius, The East, The History of Future Folk, The Kings of Summer, and yeah, that'll do it. There's all a righty. Few others if you want to look up the rest, but there's a little taste of what's coming out on Friday.
Mm-hmm. And here's a taste of what's come out on Blu-ray and DVD. Six Souls on Blu-ray and DVD, and then Dead Mine on Blu-ray and DVD. The Numbers Station. Blu-ray and DVD.
Ooh.
That one has John Cusack in it. My Super Ex-Girlfriend on Blu-ray and DVD.
Also with John Cusack in it. Whoa, wait.
No.
No?
Not that one. And then A Haunting at Silver Falls.
That's no Cusack in that one?
No.
A romantic comedy. So.
Yeah. So that's it for Blu-ray and DVD.
All right, moving on to the video games. We've got Fuse. We've also got Castle Storm, Grid 2, The Swapper, War Game, Airland Battle.
Nice.
That's a Japanese title for sure.
The Night of the Rabbit, 99 Spirits.
Of beer in the wall.
It's possible. Well, you mentioned a haunting. Here's a haunting at Cliff House.
Ooh.
Avatar Mayhem for you Avatar fans.
I was gonna say which Avatar.
Yeah, there's a taste of new video games.
All right, friend, for a taste of comics, Adventures of Superman number one. It's a collection of short stories which will hopefully whet your appetite for Man of Steel.
Ooh.
Wake, The Wake, number one. New underwater adventure. And you guys can get ready for this one.
Ready.
X-Men number one.
No!
That's right. It's featuring an all-female mutant team.
Oh, okay. I heard about this one.
Yeah. And Uncanny X-Force number five. It's an X-heavy week this week. Which I think is also part of the now line.
Now. Maybe. Now.
it's
now.
Yeah, quite now. Possibly now.
Perhaps.
Should be. Then there's on the indie set, Beyond the Big Two, is New Testament number one, a new story from Clive Barker. King Conan, the Hour of the Dragon. I'm sorry. King Conan, Hour of the Dragon.
Okay, there we go.
Okay.
Morning Glories, number 27. And Star Trek, number 21. This one is a part of an ongoing series, and it picks up right after the latest summer movie.
Hey-o. Oh, okay. Huh. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, speaking on that,
yes.
On today's show in the core, we're going to be discussing some of May's big summer movies. We'll touch on Star Trek, Into Darkness, Iron Man 3, and Fast and Furious 6. Also, in the game discussion section, I played a game called Call of Juarez Gunslinger. Now, I know that didn't come out this week. It came out last week. We didn't have a game discussion last week, so
I'm got pushed this week. That
one. Yeah. Yeah. And, we have
Caleb's Corner, and it's going to be a follow-up episode to a couple of weeks ago, talking about the Merida doll and redesign.
Oh, okay.
And we have a listener email about that, which will tie in.
So. Nice. All right. And of course, the news.
Yes.
Any teases for the folks?
Record-breaking trip to the International Space Station.
Ooh.
I have a way to get one step closer to being a robot yourself.
What? And
details in a moment.
Ooh.
Dun, dun.
And of course, everyone's favorite, this day in history.
Yeah.
All right. So before we get to all that, we're going to take a quick music break and then come back with that. So definitely stick around. You're listening to Robots Attack here on KCU Santa Clara.
Been wearing a fleece.
Want to listen to KSCU even when you're not near a radio? Stream us whenever you want at www.kscu.org or on the TuneIn radio app or website. And never be without the underground sound.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at Robots Attack Me. Email them at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at robotsattack.me.
News.
All right, welcome back to Robots Attack, the one of the Geek Central Talk Show on KSU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the Underground Sound. We are in the news.
The news.
The news.
So who's running us off tonight?
I am.
Go. Goodness.
Okay. We've all known for a long time, or at least hopefully you do, that we've been using animal bits and pieces in our bodies, mainly in our hearts, to repair problems for a long time.
Maybe you.
Well, okay, maybe not me. But as a matter of fact, my own mother has a pig valve as part of her heart.
Huh,
and it's
go.
Lasted a very long time. So there is proof that the animal byproducts in your body are actually a pretty decent thing from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
But there are problems. And so a company in Paris has taken a unique step towards solving those problems. The problem is that they aren't 100% reliable over the long term, so the idea is basically make them part of an engine. So there's something that looks like it belongs on the inside of a futuristic, like, space car or something like that. It looks like a big block Chevy for one of those cars. That it actually uses bits and pieces from a cow's heart, and it pumps them through mechanical bits. So the machine by itself is already sort of cybernetic, but then you're plugging it into you, so it's cow cybernetic, I suppose. So
So there's a machine with animal parts in it, and that's hooked up to a human.
Exactly.
Interesting.
It's made to replace a human heart. So the name of the company, which was also interesting to me, is named CarMat, which in America means a completely different thing. I don't think there's any CarMats used in this machine, but it does look formidable. It looks like it could run your body. So
yeah,
if you want to see how formidable this thing is, and I don't know for sure, this thing might be only 2 inches tall, but
it's
still
no scale.
Yeah, it looks like it should have, like, pistons running in it or something.
It really does.
Cool.
Nice.
So, yeah, line up. Get yourself one now.
Come get you one.
Animals to save the day.
Yeah.
Get you a heart pump.
I mean, why just use cows for hamburger? I mean,
there's so much more about this cow to love.
More important things.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, from there, we're going from engines for the human body to the engines that send you to space.
Space.
From cow-powered sort of engines.
Yep. From cow-powered to science-powered. Powered. recently, a new team went up to the ISS, and their trip...
To the what?
International Space Station.
Oh, okay. I thought it was some coding language or something like that. So.
No.
Just wanted to make sure.
So what makes this trip kind of unique is that they did the from launch to dock in 5 hours and 40 minutes.
Whoa. Oh.
Normally, this is a two-day affair to get from launch to dock.
Oh, okay. Now it sounds more spectacular.
Yeah. So this is a part of a kind of a new trend. They're trying to find out how they to shorten the amount of a trip takes so that they can get more people, more time for science, more time.
Faster is better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If efficiencies go up, progress improves. Mm-hmm. Everyone is happy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is the automated rockets from the SpaceX team have done this trip before.
The unarmed ones.
The unmanned ones. I guess technically they're also unarmed because they're just rockets. So, anyways, this is the first
and
time.
And there's no human with arms in it.
This is also true.
That's true. That's true.
It's a joke that works on many levels.
So the these automated rockets have made the trip because they don't have to worry about like extra G forces on the humans and stuff like that, and they can,
okay,
and all that other stuff. But so having a human occupant rocket and crew make it there and it be the same is really impressive. So they're just working on doing more of these, looking at making space flight travel slightly more useful as a scientific endeavor.
Mm.
Not that it isn't useful now, but like making it more
efficient.
Efficient, and, yes. Yep. So there you are. Science improving your life.
Sweet.
Nice. Well.
Well, if you travel by rocket.
Rockets and privatized space will get us into further space or something like that.
That is true.
Continue, Joe.
Well, from two, you know, important things to something that's really not that important. But hey, that's what I'm here for. Microsoft applies for TV achievements patent. A Microsoft patent published recently reveals that the company is looking at awarding achievements to users for watching linear video content.
Oh my goodness.
The patent, which is titled Awards and Achievements Across TV Ecosystem and was first reported on by Games Industry International, explores the idea of rewarding viewers with achievements in a similar way that games on the 360 reward players for completing certain tasks within video games. The patent does not indicate which platform this technology would be applied to. There are no references to the Xbox One, the 360, or Windows platforms. However, at the recent Xbox One reveal, Microsoft focused heavily on the console's television-related features. So, There you go. You might get achievements for watching TV.
Oh, man. That means I have to rewatch a whole bunch of stuff now?
Who knows?
Darn.
Who knows? I know. Man.
Even more useless, non-existent things for my...
Hooray! So, after you get some animal parts and you ride on your rocket ship, when you want to come down and relax...
Watch TV. You'll get an award for it.
See, there you go. It's circular and...
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
all
mm-hmm.
flows so well.
It all comes back to Earth.
Exactly.
And here on Earth, most of us have pets, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. No.
I'm going to tell Frey you said that. Frey is his cat.
He knows how I feel.
So, if you're an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes but have limited time to volunteer, you can join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving foster and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. With your help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share your stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Come join us at sjanimaladvocates.org or look for us on Facebook.
And remember, like all of our news stories, we post links to them on our Facebook page. So if you don't have the chance to check them out now, you want to see them later, there you can.
Mm-hmm.
And soon showing up on our Facebook page is this story. Is that a segue? That
sure.
Okay. Sure.
Sounds good.
Go for it. Like it. Okay. I've known a lot of people who have been completely and totally dependent on humidifiers. I'm not one of them, but I've always felt like I'm sort of missing out somehow. But the idea of buying this big monstrosity to sit next to my bed and has always been kind of scary to me. It seems like science fiction that I shouldn't be a part of. But they finally made one that I might actually try out. It's a water bottle cap that turns any water bottle with a normal like threading head
right
into a humidifier.
Oh, cool.
Interesting.
It's USB powered and it's
3.0?
I think it just uses it for the power, so it probably would be multi-USB platform capable.
Hooray.
All right, backward compatible.
Right. And it's not going to completely blow away your wallet either by the price tag.
Hooray!
Yay!
it's more than the bottle of water probably cost you, but
what?
Probably go without saying. But yeah, it's a pretty nifty little thing. It works by inserting a kind of sponge-like device down into it, so it actually naturally filters the water at the same time as it's humidifying the air. And it doesn't actually do the entire cup, which I think is kind of a downside. It only goes as far as that wick goes down into the bottle.
Yeah.
But that was made specifically to accommodate the little, like, kid-size water bottles that you see around, so you could just plug it into that and be done with it.
Is it disposable or is it not?
No, it's a permanent product that attaches to a disposable thing. So I'd assume it's for people who want a humidifier to be able to pack into their bags for trips and stuff like that.
Because
then you can just grab a water bottle and bam, instant humidifier that isn't the big suitcase thing that I'm afraid of.
Nice.
I mean, true, some of them are made into, like, kiddie things, like frogs with big scary eyeballs, which
penguins.
I also wouldn't want next to me as I'm trying to sleep at night.
Staring, play with us.
Yeah, but I have a big blue one, and I always want to put fish in it, and then I realize that that sort of goes counter to the to the process there.
Well, you just need a two.
That sounds sanitary.
You just need a two-stage one: one that's for the fish and one that's for the humidifier.
Heck yes.
Okay.
And you put the fish in the front section, so it looks like they're swimming in the humidifier, but they're not actually there.
Ooh, you should patent that.
Yes,
actually,
absolutely.
Nice.
Something like that.
Because out of all of the things where they make fish swim around in things they shouldn't be, that is my favorite.
Indeed.
We should make one.
Platform shoes, least favorite. Just so you know.
You mentioned frogs and penguins and stuff. Mm-hmm. You should make a robot one, like going, you know, attacking.
Yeah,
it's true.
That
wouldn't keep me up at night either.
Not at all.
What could possibly go wrong with that?
And yet, I'm perfectly comfortable working on a show called Robots Attack.
Well, that's because of that. That's fictional.
Or is it? Story.
from the practical to the future looking, I bring you an article from Mental Floss about haptic holograms.
So what?
Haptic holograms. Now
that sounds like science fiction.
It does indeed sound like science fiction, and it sounds a lot like a science fiction that we all know and love. I'll get to that in a second. But the phrase haptic is. It means that something that responds
to happiness,
not quite to interaction. Like when, it's like say you're on
love,
not quite. Your phone
more
like
tactile.
Yes, tactile. It's like
love can be tactile. Why do you have to judge my love?
So you have a phone and you want it, and there's buttons on a touch screen, but they aren't really there. And if you were to slide your finger across them, you wouldn't feel anything.
Mm.
A haptic device inserted with that kind of would allow you, as you run your fingers over the
it'll
phone,
allow me to feel?
It'll allow you to feel the buttons on a touch screen or similar type application. It's like it takes something that shouldn't normally have a sensation that you would expect and gives it a feedback more like what you would expect.
Mm.
So in this case, it's holograms with a haptic feedback. So a 3D visual that will give you the response of as if you were actually touching something or something much more like what that is.
Okay, so how are they making these holograms?
This is still a bit theoretical right now, but the research is being done.
Still in the fiction part of the science fiction?
It's about 50-50.
Yeah. It's the super early stages of these ideas, but it's kind of like, we have... touch screens. Where do we go from touch screens? Well, 3D imagery. We have, we're working on making 3D more usable, but when you need to reach out and interact with this object, how do you do that? So
it's like the Pirates of the Caribbean ride where they just like put an image onto some mist and then call it a. No.
No, not quite. Okay. That might be one version that they do for a while, but because that's an easy way.
Because that would be cool. I like. Mm-hmm. Mist vision.
Mist vision. But Yeah, the idea is to more like the holodeck.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Woot woot.
And the other thing I was thinking, because the picture they use on the story is the Omni Tools from Mass Effect. Drink.
Yeah. So. Yeah, we need to make that wiki page for Robots Attack. Every time someone mentions this, take a shot.
Yeah.
The shot can be anything.
Mm-hmm.
We're not implying it has to be, you know, something.
Yes. Naughty. A liquid.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that it's just really cool that is something that is actually being researched by people that are doing real science on a somewhat fictional, but it's more of a forward visionary kind of thing as opposed to, like, just... Or throwing money into a pit. It's like this will actually, you know, guide the future of interactive technology, and it's kind of awesome.
I'm working on a lot of visionary semi sci-fi projects right now.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Like as we speak.
Nice.
Wow, that's impressive.
Well, you mentioned throwing money into a pit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this isn't exactly what I would call throwing money into a pit, but I guess you could sort of look at it that way.
All right.
Again, you know, going from something that could be useful to now something that's good for entertainment-wise.
Achievements for reading.
Nah, it's called the bookshelf.
Not exactly. Yeah. But this does... perhaps give some evidence that, again, this is another Microsoft story. But since we spoke about the Xbox One last week, and a lot of people were like, where are the vid games? There was a lot of TV, but where are the video games? Well, Microsoft is apparently investing $1 billion in next-gen games.
What?
Microsoft has revealed that it will invest $1 billion toward games for Xbox One. Speaking to OXM, Don Matrick, president of Microsoft's Interactive Entertainment Business, and Phil Spencer, Microsoft Studios corporate vice president, explained that despite mixed reactions to last week's Xbox One announcement, the company is focused on games looking forward. Quote, we want to be about serious fun, Matrick said. Things that people are really passionate about, things that they love, things that they can't wait to get home to experience and to use. That's what the Xbox brings about. So we're in the serious fun side of the house. You can call us the, you know, 5 to 9 section if you want. So, they're just trying to reemphasize that we haven't abandoned games. Don't blow this
out of proportion.
Console reveal out of proportion because it didn't talk about games.
Yeah.
But they said we're going to be shown at E3, not at the console reveal. But I'm sure there's, you know, a lot of, like, jargon and whatnot of, you know, blah, blah, blah. This is what we're, you know, we're investing $1 billion in all this. I'm sure it's not all going exactly to games per se, but.
But it's definitely all going to fun.
Yeah. It should hopefully make you think that Xbox isn't abandoning their games section of their game console.
They're going to spend all that money on the next Plants vs. Zombies. I just know it.
Wow. That would be one game.
Now it's a first-person shooter.
There was rumor of the sequel being that, actually.
Wait, so, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
So there you have it. You can read the rest of the article on the Facebook page, or you can hit up IGN, because that's where I grabbed it from.
Cool beans. So does that bring us up to our favorite part of the news?
Oh, my stuff?
Yes.
Aw, you guys are so sweet. Okay, so we're all done?
It was really just Caleb that said that. But.
So okay.
We have...
wow.
This day in history.
We go.
I'm being cued for something. What's going on here?
I think we're still a little behind with the long holiday that weekend that we all experienced. Okay. So today in history. Yay.
Woohoo.
Yay.
Okay. So we're going to go. This is another one that throws us way back in the day. 1431. Today, Joan of Arc was martyred.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't even know.
Thank goodness for flames, right?
Somebody's been playing a psycho on Borderlands 2. a little bit more recently, 1908, everybody's favorite voice actor Mel Blanc was born.
Hey.
And still missed.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Who?
Get out! But no, he was the voice actor for almost all of the Warner Brothers cartoons. He did Bugs Bunny and Sylvester and
Porky Pig.
Everybody, almost.
Pretty much all the ones you recognize from the old Looney Tunes. Mel Blanc.
Yeah. And then something that's a little bit less well-known, but I thought was interesting. So the Revolutionary War vet and future president of the United States, Andrew Jackson, today he won a duel to the death against Charles Dickinson.
Huh.
Yeah, so there was this...
The author?
I thought that too when I read this. Like, all right. But no, so Andrew Jackson was married to this woman who had been abandoned by her husband. And then so Charles Dickinson was going around with all this slander about how they weren't actually divorced. And so she was all ostracized and everything. And good old Andrew Jackson was like, I will defend her honor. So
with a bullet.
With a bullet, yes. So he challenged him to a duel, and they both rode from their homes in Tennessee to Kentucky, where it was still legal to have duels.
Interesting.
Yeah. So
there you go.
Very interesting piece of history there.
Yes. Interesting.
Is it still legal to duel in Tennessee? Or
I doubt it.
Man.
If it is, it's one of those rules that hasn't been changed officially.
Yeah, that's true. You never know. There's a bunch of those laws that people have just kind of forgotten about.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah.
Whoa, that's still illegal?
Technically? Oh. Yeah. All right. Well, good thing it's not enforced.
Yeah. I think there are some places where you still can't swear in front of children and women.
I believe it.
That should be enforced.
So yeah, that's today in history.
Hooray!
Yay!
I don't know if that comes over the radio.
It goes over pretty well, I think.
Alrighty, so that's going to wrap up the news portion of Robots Attack. We're going to take another music break and then come back with Caleb's Corner.
Yes.
Caleb?
Hooray!
Yes, because you mean... calling back to mention of the Merida redesign, and we have a listener email about it, so we'll be reading that on the air as well.
Nice. Alrighty. Oh, did you?
No, I was just gonna say I'm looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
As am I. All right, let's take that music break, and you know what? I'm gonna play a fan of the show. Sam Page. We haven't heard his music in a while, so I'm like, you know what? Let's throw some on for the people. I'm going to play some tracks from his album, Breach. And check it out. All right. We are Robots Attack, one and only Geek Center talk show on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at Robots Attack Me. Email them at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at robotsattack.me.
And now, it's time for Caleb's Corner.
Welcome back to Robots Attack.
Thanks. I was just about to say that, but thank you. We are in Caleb's Corner, as you just heard, and this is where I get to opinionate, and the views, the statements and opinions made here do not reflect those of KSCU, nor necessarily those of the Robots Attack crew. They are mostly my own thoughts. If they chime in, that's of their own accord. So,
or the voices in your head.
Or the voices in my head. They don't even agree with me sometimes. It's really annoying. Anyways, the... a couple weeks ago, I mentioned the noise that was made over the redesign of Merida from the Disney's Brave into what is arguably a more marketable image. And one of our distinguished listeners has sent us an email with her thoughts on the matter. She says, "When I first saw the revamped Merida, I had the same thoughts as Super Jason. They gave her a waist, parentheses, lame.
That's you, Jason.
Other than that, it was mostly...
Wait, what?
Somebody was listening to your words.
Nice. I didn't know that happened.
Who said that?
But it was mostly just a sparkly dress, right? And then she went on, "Well, when you look a little closer, it's a lot more than that. There's two ways to look at this and consider that we didn't touch on in the show. First way is marketing and sales.
At this point, she's had done her in the morning. The image is more Barbie doll-esque, and we also noted that it didn't exactly scream Barbie doll, but that's exactly why they made this change, made her look that way. One of the main items they market and sell with these blinged out super sparkly princess lines are Barbie dolls, with an exclamation point. One of their main aims with this redo of Merida is to bridge the gap between her original image and her Barbie, her. Literally make her fit the mold, which is so opposed to Merida's character, and one of the main moral aims of the movie. It might not seem super Barbie at first, but that is why they did this. View number two, the target audience is little girls. And little kids are like sponges. They are at that time in life when they're looking at everything that they can to learn what is normal. Little girls are looking to find out what is normal and what it means to be a girl and eventually a woman. And they notice all the details. Seriously, it's ridiculous. So for us, it may not seem too noticeable or noticeable at all to Super Jason that she has that she's got a waist or that she's wearing some makeup, that her hair is more tame or that her boobs are bigger. That the dress falls just off her shoulders now, showing a little more skin. But a little kid will notice all of these things, and it's obvious to them. And it adds to what they view as normal. And it absolutely sends a message about how girls and women are supposed to be. Even if her personality is unchanged, we're telling little girls that, yeah, you can be yourself like doing different things, but you should still be pretty and alter your natural looks to make yourself prettier, and watch your figure, and show a little skin. And it's also telling little boys what they should expect from women, with the emoticon of meh face. Continuing, not good. There isn't anything inherently wrong with watching your figure or wanting to look good, but that shouldn't be the requirement or expectation of womanhood. The cool thing to note is that the backlash from this image shows that people are aware and now notice these things that used to be pushed off as not a big deal. This is one image among many that sends this kind of message. But it's neat to see that society can be a little more aware of what norms and expectations are that we are consuming and what we are feeding our kids. So, another person's view of what is... Of this issue, and
we appreciate the feedback.
Definitely.
Well put, viewer.
And she
listener,
sent
sorry.
She also sent
viewer
along.
Of sounds.
Maybe she's viewing it in her mind. Yes. Like.
Yeah. Very true. The she also sent a link to the that has pictures of what the new doll looks like, and this doll. If I didn't know better, I would have thought it was Ariel rather than...
Oh, my goodness.
rather than Merida.
What have they done to her head?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
it does look like Ariel.
It's like, yeah, if it wasn't for the fact that I knew that it's supposed to be Merida and it says Merida on the product description, it would have been like, who is this an Ariel... costume change.
So that's what it really was. They had a whole bunch of Ariel dolls left over.
These things are not selling, guys.
Like, you know what we could do?
You know, I wouldn't put it past them.
We can use Ariel's giant head on this much smaller doll.
If you'd had the chance to change your doll, would you?
I definitely
Clever.
Want a bigger head.
Gigantic head.
So, yeah, and it does bring up the point that there's that the image that is portrayed and the image that is being sold are, you know, that it is something that is being sold, and we need to be aware of how of what these slight things can mean. Not that we should ban Barbies or whatever, but we just, you know, be aware of it. And if your child asks you about it, like, give them real answers about these kinds of things. Help them to see that, you know, this is a doll. It is designed to look a certain way. People don't look like this, and if without like surgical help. And
remember, Barbie is too thin to menstruate.
That's a fact I was not aware of.
Yeah,
I didn't know that her waist is too small to support her upper body. But other than
that it was one of the things I had read a while ago.
So you know this figurine is.
But isn't that a bonus or no?
Wow. Get out.
Send your comments to superjason@gmail.com.
What? Come on.
He likes his woman sterile.
Oh, jeez. Man.
Whoa. I didn't say that.
So that doll, is that after the redesign? So this was like before they decided to redesign it?
The
or?
Redesign, I think, was to prelude to the release of this doll. Was part of like the shift.
But I mean the like now they're like going like Disney went okay we're gonna go back.
They
like, that doll they already
the,
like,
yeah this doll's already been made. It's on shelves. It's being sold
because it's the old Ariel doll.
I wouldn't doubt it. But they
is there a plan to like make a new doll with now the new.
Not sure.
Oh, okay.
That's the part that's unclear, and that's where I think some people are still a little miffed at Disney's position on this. Like, they did take down the image that raised the fervor in the first place, which is good. Means they're listening to people, and hopefully they're also hearing not just that they're angry about the changes, but what they're actually saying. What they're actually angry about. So it's not angry about a doll being made of Merida. They're angry about what was changed to make her more doll-like.
Yeah. Yeah,
hopefully,
I mean...
Hopefully they hear... That's what they're actually hearing.
Because, I mean, I understand, obviously, you know, the doll, like, it's already in production, already being made, so they could put it out there. I'm just curious now, since they said, okay, we're going to go back and change it if they'll, you know, put out as much of this doll as they have, and then when they do another run, it'll be... the newer design that they say they're going to go back to or not. But
yeah, it's hard to it's the one thing that I haven't found any good articles on whether they'll be shifting that because doll making is astonishingly expensive thing, because all the molds are sort of preset, or most of them are, and remaking molds is not prohibitively expensive, but it's not cheap for certain. And if you know, maximizing the amount of value you get out of each mold is something that toy companies want to do, which I don't fault them for, but you know, it's just kind of unfortunate that there isn't a more realistic popular doll form, possibly, you know.
As a frame of reference, that these molds are made of giant chunks of metal. They're milled out. And they have many, many copies of the doll in each mold, so it is a fair chunk of change to make.
Yeah,
it's a non-trivial event to make a new mold. So, it's kind of a bind, obviously, because like they want to continue their highly successful princess line.
Mm-hmm.
Don't fault them for that, you know, and. You know, making a marketable image is always important because that's how you get things to sell. But I guess it's just if the doll was its own thing, and but the general image of Merida wasn't changed as much, it might not be as big a deal. Because then it's like, yeah, this is the doll. The dolls kind of they come from an assembly line that makes all the other dolls, so they're gonna look like that. But the trueness of the character might still be what it is, and that would so. I don't know. And unfortunately, I don't have a solution to this. But if
what?
But keeping the conversation open, like being aware, looking around, just you know, think a little, take that extra moment to think a little bit about what you're seeing, and if that's something you want, and if you don't like it, then maybe you can help lead a charge to change something. You know, there's. You know, with things like Kickstarter and 3D printing, maybe you can start making dolls or something like it that will, you know, take off and help change the industry. You never know.
Or as the listener pointed out, like, look through it through a child's eyes.
Yes, and that's something that we need to remind ourselves, that kids are not little adults, they're kids. And that will they see the world differently than we do.
A whole new world. Open up your eyes. That's not part of the song. But that's
yeah.
So do you think maybe in the Planes movie they'll like put one of the planes in like a sexy bikini or something? I don't know. Anyway,
it'll at least have giant eyelashes. I know that for sure.
Well, this is true.
You gotta make the plane female
somehow.
Well, if you're on a plane, you're probably going on vacation, and maybe you want to go see the waves. There's my segue. So nice. Come join the fun at Save the Waves Coalition's annual fundraiser bash, Life is a Wave, Friday night, June 14th at 111 Mina Gallery in downtown San Francisco. Enjoy live music from Native Elements and Green Gorilla Lounge DJs, and a spectacular auction while raising money for Save the Waves environmental programs. Buy tickets and get more info at www.savethewaves.org.
Alrighty, that's going to do it for Caleb's Corner. Going to take another music break and then come back with our game discussion, where I will be discussing Call of Juarez Gunslinger.
Gunslinger.
That's right. Alrighty, you're listening to Robots Attack on KSCU Santa Clara.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at Robots Attack Me. Email them at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at robotsattack.me.
Alrighty, welcome back to Robots Attack. We are now in the game discussion portion of the show. And I played a little game called Call of Juarez Gunslinger. It's a first-person shooter set in the Old West, just in case the title didn't tell you that already.
Okay. Did you play the last one, number one?
I did not play The Cartel because it was not in the Old West and the reviews were horrid.
Yes.
But I did play the first two and I really enjoyed them.
Okay.
And this one I thoroughly enjoyed. I will definitely be purchasing this game.
Oh, cool.
Right on.
Yeah, it's like, it starts off, it takes place in 1910.
Okay.
And the way they do like the cutscenes, it's like images that they move and then they have voiceover. It looks really pretty. It's a good looking game. But yeah, it takes place in 1910. It's this bounty hunter who comes into town. I just played the trial, so this is just what I experienced from the trial. He enters this saloon, and while he's getting a drink, his name is mentioned, and some patrons at the bar overhear his name and are like, oh, you know, are you really this famous bounty hunter? And is like, you know, yep. And it's like, oh, I'm sure you've got some you know, fantastic stories to tell. And so, you know, I'll buy you a round of drinks. He goes over and sits down and starts telling him a story about him riding with Billy the Kid. Now, if you've seen Young Guns and Young Guns 2, you'll be very familiar with the level you play in the trial, because it's very similar to like the end of Young Guns. Kind of mixed in with a little bit of Young Guns 2, because Pat Garrett is not in Young Guns 1. but yeah, what they do is you have the bounty hunter that you play. He's narrating the whole time you're playing, but then also the other people that are sitting around listening to him will occasionally like ask him questions or throw in to the story while you're playing. And the really cool thing that I like about it is while you're playing through it, you'll find these little like items that you can collect, but they'll give you like the actual real history of what happened during the time.
Cool. Oh,
so you're getting sort of like three different stories while you're playing. What those are is like by finding those items, you learn the real history. You're getting the story from the bounty hunter, and then you're getting another story from the patrons that like ask him stuff that they heard about by reading from like dime novels and things. So this is it's kind of a slight spoiler, but it gives you sort of a feel of the game. At the end of the trial, the character goes into a barn and he says, like, well, you know, when I entered in this barn, that's when I met up with Pat Garrett. That's not exact dialogue, but just a kind of paraphrase. And then one of the patrons sitting around there jumps in and is like, oh, and this is where you went into a duel and like gunned him down. And he's like, oh, really? Where'd you hear that? And it's like, oh, you know, I read it in this book. And so you actually go into a duel. They took the duel system from, I think it's Bound in Blood. It's really cool. It's like the camera shifts to behind your waist. So like you see your gun in the holster.
Right.
And then in front is the other character. And you have this like circle that you move with the right stick.
Mm-hmm.
You use that to focus. And while you want to aim that over the guy and he'll like kind of move back and forth like you see in any Western duel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You want to move that and keep it over him. And so you raise your focus meter as high a percentage as you can. And you want to keep an eye on his hand. And as soon as he like starts to reach for his gun, you hit the right trigger, you go for yours. And then you time it just right. So you hit that and then hit it again to draw and shoot. So it takes a little bit to get used to, but once you get it down, it's really cool. Like the first couple times I did it, I got shot. And then like the third time we both shot each other at the same time. And then finally, like I got him.
Mm-hmm.
And when I shot him, obviously Pat Garrett wasn't shot by this guy in real history. So what happens is the bounty hunter goes, no, that's not what I meant when I ran into Pat Garrett when I went into the barn.
Okay.
And what the game does is it rewinds all the way back to you, like right outside the barn. You walk in and then you get knocked out over the head. So basically the game, from what I've heard, is it does a lot of that sort of things. So you'll play and it mixes in like dime novel history, what the bounty hunter is saying happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you find those collectible pieces, the actual real history of what happened. So
interesting.
If you're at all interested in Westerns and that sort of thing, and I am, it's really awesome. The gameplay is really nice and smooth. They do a sort of, I guess a good example is like Borderlands 2, how you have like three trees that you can pick skills from. As you level, you'll get like skill points you can dump into. The first one is called Gunslinger, and it focuses on dual wielding pistols. And what it is, like, the first thing in it is being able to dual wield a pistol.
Hey. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then from there, it's like the cylinders of a pistol.
Mm-hmm.
And there's abilities that go around. So, like, if you pick the one on the top, it unlocks the next one there. So you can kind of go around either way. And they range, you know, from, like, I went with the dual wielding one. It ranges from, like, quicker reload, being able to hold more pistol ammo.
Mm-hmm.
There's another skill tree that focuses on long range stuff, like rifles and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one is like close range things like shotguns. And I think like melee attacks, because there is a melee attack in there.
Okay.
And then the other cool feature is a slowdown sort of bullet time that you can do. It's like in the top left corner, there's a pistol. And when it fills up the meter, you hit the right bumper. I played this on 360.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does is it slows down time. But the cool thing is it highlights all the enemies on screen red.
Ooh.
So you know like where all the bad guys are. So there isn't one like maybe hiding or something. I mean, they can be hiding, but they'll all be highlighted red.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you can open fire on them. There's another meter. So if you take like a bullet that would kill you, if that meter is full, it'll slow down the time again. You'll see the bullet like come at you. It's, you know, sort of Matrix style slow. Uh-huh. And you see the vibration around the bullet and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you do is you move left or right with the left stick, depending upon where the bullet is, to dodge it.
Uh-huh.
So if it's coming at you from the right, you want to go left to dodge out of the way. And it's kind of neat. Like as you're taking hits, it like on the screen, it tears like a bullet hole. And there's little things, and you know, it goes away after a few seconds, but you know, it's just kind of a neat little
visual
image
effect.
Yeah, and it does the same sort of thing, like if you're getting shot on the right, like it'll highlight red, so you know where you're getting shot. And then another thing that sort of threw me off, usually when you dual wield things, the left trigger isn't your zoom anymore. It becomes like whatever gun's in your left hand.
Right.
Not in this case. You still fire both pistols with the right trigger. It just fires them like like that. And then the left trigger gives you like a slight zoom. So at first I was like, why am I not in it? But you kind of angle the pistols a little bit more. So you still can get a nice zoom, which is nice.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, if you want to be a little more accurate, definitely just stick with one pistol or whatever other weapon. But it does still give you like a slight zoom.
Cool.
If you want to.
So you're not just flying blind, so to speak.
Yeah, it's not just all completely from the hip. But yeah, it gives you rewards, sort of like Call of Duty, where if you get a long shot, you get some points. If you get a headshot, long shot, you get some points. You know, just every sort of style way of taking people out, like blowing up explosive barrels. Yes, there's explosive barrels in this game. You know, we'll
are
give you
red?
Points. Yeah, I think they are. They're not like glowing red, but you know, you can tell. Yeah, I think those explode if I shot them. But yeah, I think it's really smooth. Like it plays handled really well. If you, it doesn't seem, as far as I can tell from the trial, it doesn't like, you don't play as any of the characters from the other Call of Juarez games. So I think it just sort of is using that title and perhaps taking place in that world, but you don't need to have played those other games to play this one.
Gotcha.
As far as I can tell, they might make like references to the other characters, maybe, you know, throughout the game, but they hint at like, I mean, obviously the first one you're running with Billy the Kid, and Pat Garrett, it mentions that you'll run into other historical figures as well.
Okay.
But yeah, I just like the idea of like sort of real history, fake history from dime novels, and sort of like maybe something in between. And so
yeah, it's a nice change.
So I definitely recommend it and had a good time.
Very cool.
Yeah, I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're a fan of first person shooters, especially westerns, there aren't that many.
That's the only one I can think of.
Well, yeah, besides the other Call of Juarez games, and
well, yeah, I mean, you know, that line of games is the only one I can think of that's a first person western.
Yeah, because Red Dead's like third person, but yeah, let's see, that'll do it for the game discussion. We'll take another break, but before that, Jen will give us another PSA.
Sweet. Are you interested in free radio time? KSCU loves to broadcast announcements about local nonprofits and government agencies. Email traffic@kscu.org with information on services or upcoming events, and we will consider making an announcement for your organization.
All righty. Let's take that music break and then come back with the core, where we'll be discussing some of May's big movies. All right. You're listening to Robots Attack.
You are now entering the core. Enjoy your stay.
Alrighty, welcome back to Robots Attack. One only Geek Centric Talk Show. On KCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the Underground Sound. We are in the core discussing some of May's big movies. All right, lady and gentlemen, what would you like to tackle first?
Iron Man.
Iron Man.
Alrighty. Iron Man 3.
Iron Man 3.
It was good.
I liked it. Yeah.
Okay, done.
Now, I thought it was, I don't know if I've may not be the best of the series, but I thought it was I liked
rank
it.
What would you put it in out of the three?
I think I liked it slightly more than.
Which one do you like first? Which one? Which one's number one?
Number one. I think the first one.
Okay.
I like that. I like the first one a lot, and then I think this one, and then number two. And it's like, and it's not like there's a big gap between any of them. They're all kind of like bunched together near the top. It's.
Yeah, so. I would say much the same, except I only saw the second one once, and I don't really remember it. So that one, so there's a little bit more of a gap for me, but it's only because I don't remember. So, and it's kind of a shame that it didn't leave more of an impression on me, but that might be my fault.
No, it's not your fault.
So what would you guys
like? Don't let yourself think that.
You're on my side for once? Wow.
Savor it.
How about the rest of y'all?
Yeah, I'd probably put it about the same ranking on it. I made the mistake of looking at all of the Rotten Tomatoes stuff and whatnot, see what the general audience's view of it was, and I completely disagree with the second one being as lowly rated as it seems like it was.
Yeah.
So I didn't think there was a huge difference between how good this one and the last one were, but yeah, they were both definitely not as... I'm always a sucker for whenever they introduce a character. I like the first section of the story usually a lot better. I mean, there's certain places where that strays. Like, I'm like most people, I think I like Empire better than A New Hope, for instance. But
a little bit more polished.
But generally, I like where they start the story. I'm the same way on the Lord of the Rings movie. I can rewatch that first movie over and over again for some reason. And the other ones, I feel weird. Like, it's like I'm jumping into the middle of things. It doesn't seem like an appropriate place to start, like a Saturday afternoon or something like that. So I go back to the first one. And I think I feel about the same way about Iron Man. I've rewatched the first one quite a few times. I got the DVD of it. I'm unfortunately not a Blu-ray person. but yeah, so... I don't really see me rewatching this one over and over again, for instance, but I still liked it a lot.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. I have to say, I thought the enemy in this one was really lame. The Mandarin was cool. But the other enemy I thought was really lame. I don't know. It was fine. It was fun. I sort of put it on par with the second one. Like, I was not a big fan of the villain in the second one that much.
Okay. Yeah.
But it had like some neat things. Like they both had some neat things about them. But yeah, I like the first one way more. But yeah, I don't know. This one was like not as fun to me as the other ones, but not a bad movie by any means. Just while I was watching it, I was like, I was hoping for more. But.
Huh. Go ahead.
What were you hoping for more of? More suits? More of the suits?
Well, it's an interest. Like, I totally understand the direction they went. Like, definitely what happened to Tony Stark after the Avengers would mess with your mind. There's just stuff that like the end, I mean, when all the suits showed up and like everyone was jumping into suits, and then there were parts where like he wasn't in the suit, and it felt like, hey, we have this neat idea. Let's like make let's throw this scene in, like, this might be neat.
Right.
Like, and so they did a scene of that, and then like, oh, this might be neat. Let's make a scene of that. And like, where maybe they've done that for all of them, this one, it just didn't seem like it fit as well.
It didn't gel as well as the others.
Yeah. Okay. Like, yeah, I don't know.
I can see where you're coming from with that.
Yeah. Same here. And I thought it was kind of fun. I thought it was kind of cool, but I can see how somebody might think it was a bit over the top.
Or underwhelming at the same time, depending on how you looked at it.
Yeah. I loved like the giant Iron Man armor that was only in like a couple little scenes.
Completely underused.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Hulkbuster.
But yeah, it was just weird like seeing like the president in one of the suits, or like all these various people like jumping into the suits and stuff. And it was like, so I guess Tony Stark really isn't needed. Like, anyone could just jump into his suit. Like, I don't know. It was weird. It was just, yeah. I just, as I was watching it, I was like, wow, this is weird. I'm enjoying it, but I don't know. It was weird.
Okay. Fair enough.
I mean, I'm trying not to like give too much away, but it has been a long enough time that I would imagine our listeners have seen it already.
Oh, yeah, you probably not see it already. Yeah.
And I would say it's definitely worth seeing in the theater.
Mm-hmm. So. It is a big screen experience for sure. It's,
yeah,
there's lots of things go pretty sparkly boom across the screen. It's cool.
Yeah,
yeah. I have to admit I wasn't completely sold on the flamey stuff. I won't say any more than that. I thought it was a cool idea, but it was weird. It was like they. This movie was so founded in reality by bringing in the psychological aspects and all of that stuff. It mm-hmm. seemed like, okay, we're going to really think through how a person would react to all this.
Yeah.
And then it threw in like completely super comic booky
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, it was, yeah. It took that from the comic line, that storyline, and just went like, here's the comic,
I think they could have pulled it off. I have a feeling what it came down to is this is a director who isn't super into the big science fiction-y, special effects-y movies.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like the special effects artist might have run away with it. just a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I definitely liked the direction that they took with the Mandarin.
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
That was cool.
That fit really well. Yes. Like watching it, like, okay, yeah, because if they didn't go that way, how are they gonna do that without it being really stupid?
Like, yeah,
yeah, like, and there okay. there's a line really early on that it should be a dead giveaway about the entire thing. And I kind of held on to that. And then there was a little thing that completely threw me off. Like, wait, no, it can't be that because of this thing. And then, yeah, that's what I did like about the movie is it felt like it had a double twist to it. So that was kind of cool. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I have to say, before I forget, Jon Favreau sucked in that movie, in my personal opinion. All of his stuff was so dumb. Like, this whole joke about him being like super security guy, and they kept like pounding that in over and over. It was like, oh, I wish you just died. It would have been better. then this Downton Abbey joke, and then like, you're not wearing your badge. It was like, what is this crap? Get off of this and go
back
to Tony
Stark. I like the
Downton
Abbey joke, but I'm with you on that. To me, that's the problem with Favreau in anything that's not a Favreau thing. It seems like
it's just weird.
They don't know how to use him.
I thought it was like fine in two, like just kind of the little parts he was like, okay, he's just over there. And this, it was like, I don't know, they just kept doing this security thing. It's like, shut up. Okay, yes, that guy's not wearing a badge. And yeah, you're super security. God, I don't care. You have a mullet and then stuff. And then you know, and you know, it's just, whatever.
Yeah. All right.
So yeah, there you go.
There you go. So from there,
anything else, Jen? Any other final thoughts?
I was going to mention, but it got kind of mentioned a lot, I did not expect Tony Stark to have, like, psychological, you know, issues after Avengers. And I liked that I just did not expect them to run with it. You know what I mean? Because I kind of got the feeling that, like, Tony Stark is kind of a shallow character and we're just going to keep it that way. But then, you know, going into the theater and then seeing like, oh my God, he is not the same man. I'm like, this is cool.
Yeah.
You know, so I think, you know, kudos for the writers on that because, you know, not even Tony Stark can see the stuff that he did and come out the same man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you think like his last little bit in Avengers, I mean, he was literally like, okay, I'm sacrificing myself. And then he like lived.
Mm-hmm.
Spoilers, I guess. Yeah. If you haven't seen Avengers yet, well, I don't know why you're
that's your fault.
Yeah. But yeah.
I don't know where you were living since that was like such a highly profitable movie.
Yeah.
Unless three people saw it 13 billion times.
That's true. That's true.
Entirely possible.
Well, before we go on to Star Trek.
Star Trek in the Darkness.
I have a question for you. Are you an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes?
Yes.
So you can join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving forever and foster homes for pets in our local shelters. With your help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share your stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join us at sjanimaladvocates.org or look for us on Facebook.
All right.
Nice. All right, so now we move on to Star Trek Into Darkness.
Star Trek, woo!
Yeah, I liked that one a lot. It was really cool in IMAX 3D, and I am so glad I paid extra for that ticket.
Yeah, it had probably the most impact of a 3D movie that I've seen, like, since they started doing it, I think. It was really cool and, like, kind of a throwaway effect right at the beginning of just little things, like, floating around in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
But it fully, like, thrust you into the scene right away, just having little particles from the trees, like,
just
kind of floating past you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I definitely noticed more than one people like jumping out of their seat with the spears being chucked.
Yeah, that was like they wouldn't. They go, oh my gosh.
Oh, sorry, right. Spoiler.
Right, they sold it way better than all of the other things where they completely go for that, which was the weird thing too. It's like I've had axes thrown directly at my head in 3D, and it didn't really hit me at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, all of it's just the little nuances that I think really bring you into it. Instead of having it be like one big event. It made a real effort to make every scene make you feel like it is. Like the lens flares, the lens flares. I was not sold on lens flares until I saw them in 3D when they were surrounding my face. And that was, then lens flares were kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember seeing on Xbox, they had a little like preview video interview with J.J. Abrams talking about working on Into Darkness, and like one of the things he said is like, you know, when I started out with this whole 3D thing, I thought it was a gimmick and it wasn't really into it, and then I started seeing what really could be done with really good 3D, and I'm like, oh well, gotta do that now. Right. So he actually like I think that's one of the reasons why it worked so well, is that the 3D was intentional from the beginning to be a part of the film and not we're making a 3D movie.
Yeah.
Put on your red and blue glasses, kids, because this dinosaur is going to eat you alive.
I think that's actually what makes him like one of the best directors out there, is that he's really good at absorbing what's good about all of these different genres and little bits of technology, and he's good at taking that and throwing it into something that you actually want to see. And I'm not surprised that he's kind of dominating television and movies and every other thing at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely.
I'm probably gonna blaspheme as far as some people are concerned. I think he's better than Spielberg at this point.
At this point, we haven't seen Spielberg in a while.
Yeah, it's different. You can see that he has been informed by the skill of Spielberg. The skill and
I'm not saying he didn't stand on the shoulder of giants. To take a line from a Spielberg movie, but. I'm still standing by it.
Yeah, I mean, I would say he's probably going to be heralded as like an equivalent level of quality in within our generation of creative directors. I think he'll probably, if he can keep up the space, he's going to like be a driving force of film for quite a while. Yeah. I think.
I liked this one better than the first one.
Yeah, what would you like about it?
I think, okay, so I'll be honest. I think it took me a while to get used to the feel of the first one.
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, I mean, the new Enterprise is basically a Mac store, which was kind of weird. It's all white and shiny. So what? Also in the first one, I kind of didn't like how the story, like you didn't know what was going on for like the first half of the movie for the first one. Mm-hmm. It didn't sit well with me. I mean, I understand, you know, I understand why he did it, and I can see how it's one way of telling a story, but I didn't like it personally.
Mm-hmm.
The second one was a bit more straightforward in a way, and I felt like he kind of hit more of a groove with this is how these stories, you know, are going to go in this universe now.
Mm-hmm.
There was also a lot more action than I was expecting, but I think that's good.
Yeah.
It was done well. It wasn't, you know, action for the sake of action.
Yeah, I have to admit, like, that the beginning of the movie, it sort of scared me from one perspective. It was like, it was so incredibly action-packed. It was like, okay, is this going to be too much? I mean, are they going to catch their breath at some point here? But thankfully, it came back around, and it felt more natural and so on. It ended up being a good punch for the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it scared me.
Yeah, I would say this movie was a lot of fun for a movie where, in my mind, nothing really happened. I'll try to say some stuff without spoiling it. It has been a little while. So if you haven't seen it yet, what are you waiting for?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty sure everybody knows who Benedict Cumberbatch is. If you follow Star Trek a fair amount, I think you have a pretty, like, his reveal was not a surprise.
Go back
to
previous episodes of Robots Attack where I posited.
Yeah, it's like, so his sort of big reveal wasn't like a big reveal for me, but that's because I was following Star Trek, you know, a little bit more. But anyway, like, I was disappointed that they did a lot of the same thing they did with the original Star Trek when they talked about his character. I won't come out and say it, but
right.
I really hoped that they actually would do more backstory, because like in the TV show, it's very similar to this. It's like very vague of like, well, 300 years ago, I was this and my people, like, it didn't really go into that much detail. It's like, okay, it's the original Star Trek show. You know, I'll give them that. It was still cool, but
yeah.
This one, they did the same thing. It was like 300 years ago, I was the super soldier they created. So basically, 300 years ago, they could make this guy, and what? Like, it didn't make any sense to me. Like, it was like,
why would they go back to normal people?
I mean, because they showed the timeline. It was like, that would have been like earlier than it is now. So they could make, like, that guy, like, 20 years ago now, but they have, like, starship. Like, it made no sense to me. It was like, okay. I mean, he was cool and all. I will say this. My favorite part of the movie, the Klingons. Oh, man, they were so cool. Like, yeah. I love their helmets. I love the design of them. They were, like, my favorite part of the movie. I was like, those guys are so cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just weird, like, nothing happened to me in that movie, but it's a lot of fun. Like, just watching it.
Because
they do some really dumb stuff of like, hey, Bones, what you working on over there? Oh, I'm going to do this. All right. So anyway, Benedict Cumberbatch, you're being bad. Like, they did a few things where they're like, wow, that's some really bad foreshadowing. Gee, I wonder what's going to happen.
Right. Yeah.
So
but there's a tribble.
Yeah. But yeah. Still a lot of fun,
the one thing that I'll disagree with the Cumberbatching was they had a really cool scene where they actually show him actually throwing down and owning an entire scene, knocking everybody on their butts.
Yeah.
Which the original didn't have. And it,
well, the show.
Are you talking about
the show, or are you talking about like the movie?
Well, okay. In my view, both in a way, because the movie there was a lot of like neat tactical things. The show there was a fight scene, but there wasn't anything like grand of scale that made it seem like a super soldier or anything like that. This time they did show. Because being a super soldier.
Yeah,
because I think I want to say in the episode was just Kirk,
like, right,
in that section where he was. So yeah, couldn't really have been a throwdown.
If I remember right, it basically just, he capitalized on the fact that Kirk's only move is a haymaker.
Yeah.
And soundly beat him because of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it sounds like overall, though, we all enjoyed it. And
yeah, had a good time. I liked it a bunch. So
we move on to our last one real quick.
Last one real quick. Fast and Furious 6.
Dumbass fun.
Yeah. I mean, it is pure popcorn fun.
Yeah. It's, none of that stuff is like would ever happen like in real life. Like,
oh, no.
You would have been killed trying to perform
like that.
That
all the time. What are you talking about?
Not so much the driving, but some of the other aerial acrobatics and fight stuff that, you know, are like, wow, if that really happened, you'd have been dead. But hey, it was still awesome.
You're a superhero in this movie, so we'll let it slide.
Yeah. Yeah, what was it? Dang, there was something, though. Man, popped my mind. I still say I think I liked Fast 5 better. But this one was still a lot of fun.
Is it worthy to see in the theater or wait till Netflix?
The theater is nice because a lot of the action sequences are really cool on the big screen.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, if you have like a nice TV at home, it's probably still cool, but some of them are. I will say this, though. The trailers, man, they gave away a lot of the stuff. Like, seeing... Like, they showed a lot of those sequences already, like... In the movie, I was kind of like, it's still cool, but it's like, man, I wish I didn't see that already. Like, you know, it's shorter versions of them, but it's still like, okay, this is that part they showed in the trailer. Okay, this is that part they showed in the trailer. Like, you know.
It was, I think, by far my favorite thing, and hopefully this doesn't ruin anything. It just prepares people. they had a nice nod for people who were a fan of the third one. Which I know some people consider like the redhead stepchild of the series, but if you're like me, I actually liked Tokyo Drift quite a bit.
That's one of my favorites.
And
setting it up for 7.
Right, and so definitely stay after like the initial credits because there's a nice little bit right there that just dead on references that movie and is an outright setup for the next movie. So
yeah,
and I'm super excited for the next one because of it.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. That's been some of May's big movies that we saw. Let us know what you think. If you saw them, what you saw, what we didn't see, let us all that jazz. Anyway, you've been listening to Robots Attack here on KCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the Underground Sound, the one and only geek-centric talk show. We're here every Thursday from 7 to 9. Coming up next is the Pre-Funk Show. Stick around for that. They play some good music. I'm not just saying that. I do actually listen to them when I'm driving home. I'm like, I like that song. So thanks for listening. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back next Thursday. Alrighty, take it easy.
Raccoon. Veronica. Mixto.